You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
We've got ignition students or ignition kids in here with us, the kindergarten through fifth graders, and I'm going to need help, but as we have the last few weeks, but I want to clarify this. If you're in kindergarten through fifth grade, I'm going to need your help, but you're going to need to answer a few questions. So if you're not comfortable with a microphone in your face to answer questions, please don't come up, but it's going to be really easy questions that you're going to need to answer. So as many of you want to come up, if you want to help, if you're in ignition age, please come on up here. I can use you. I've got one coming. Okay, the rest of you can do, there you go. Come on. Come on. Yeah. Anybody else? All right, can you ladies here, let's give you a stool because you're going to need to sit down. All right, that's just four. That's all I got. All right, I got some more coming. All right. I could really... Oh, no, don't pretend like you're not coming up here. I'm looking at you. All right, here, grab a stool here. Take a stool over there. Have a seat. Just grab that there. Oh, no, you can stay there. I just want to make sure we have enough so that everybody can see everybody. Oh. All right, do we have enough? One, two. You need one. Here. Do you want to sit over there or sit over here? Over there. Okay, of course. Don't want to be too far away from you. There you go. Okay, now, what we're going to do here is I am going to, don't pay attention to the screen right now. I am going to show you a picture on this screen, and you, or you can look up there, and I'm going to go down the row, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what you think that picture is. Okay? You with me so far? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yes? I'm going to ask you with the microphone. Okay. Now, can you do something for me? Now I actually need your help, Zach. Can you change it to the video view macro? Because I don't want to spoil. They can see what's next, and I don't want them to know what's next for the on-screen. It should be what says video in the macro there. Oops. I meant for the presenter view. Hey, that worked here. Oh. Hey, there we go. All right, good. All right, what were we talking earlier about whether we look like professionals? Yeah, we do. Okay, so does that make sense? So I'm going to ask you. So here, and by the way, okay, now I'm talking to you. You are not allowed to say a thing. Understood? We're going to see how much these kids know about life. All right. So are you guys ready? Okay, go ahead and show us the first picture. Okay? Now, I want you to tell me what you think. And listen, don't be like, he took mine. No, you can't say she took my answer, okay? You have to give me an actual answer. What do you think that is?
It looks like a little stand, how you, like, drive and, like, have to pay money to get in somewhere.
Okay, like a toll booth maybe thing. Okay, what do you think?
Telephone booth.
Okay, all right. What's in it?
A telephone.
Okay, all right. What do you think it is?
It looks like a photo booth.
Okay, all
right. Where you take pictures.
Okay, all right. What do you think it is?
A telephone booth.
Okay. All right. What do you think?
A telephone booth.
All right. What's in it?
A phone.
And what do you do with that phone?
You can call people.
How do you do that? Okay. All right. What do you think it is?
Phone booth.
All right. And what's in it?
Phone.
How do you use it?
You press button.
Okay. Is that it? Is there anything
yep.
else you need to do?
Yep.
No. All right. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
You don't know. Okay. All right. So, there you have, of course, guys, it is a phone booth, but it's not just a phone booth. It is what is called a pay phone booth. And in order to use it, you would have to take a quarter or a nickel, depending on how old you are, and you would put it into the thing there, into that spot right there. There's a slot, and you put the quarter in, and it would give you so many minutes, you'd have to call, and once the time was up, you'd either put more money in, or it would be over, okay? How many of you have used the payphone? Okay. How many of you have used the payphone? All right, got it, okay. All right, so, good. You guys did a great job. Okay, next picture. What is this? What is that picture? You can make something up too. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. What do you think it is?
A tape. Maybe?
A tape. Okay.
Recording.
Okay. What do you think?
A flashlight.
Okay. Okay. Maybe two lights there. Okay. What have you got?
Music box.
A music box. All right. Fun.
It looks like the front of a car light.
A car lights. Okay. What do you think?
Tape recorder.
A tape recorder. All right. What do you think?
A tape recorder.
All right. A tape recorder. And what kind of tape?
Like a tape that you put into a music player, like when you record something.
Okay. All right. So this is, in fact, a video cassette tape. It is what people used to put into a VCR to watch movies or to record, but not just sounds. A little box. Yeah, you would put it in a little box. It would shoot on the screen. Yeah, and if you recorded it, you'd have to put it on your shoulder. But so this is a video cassette. How many of you have ever used a video cassette? Anybody? Okay, how many of you have ever used a video cassette? All right, good. And after video cassettes came, technically came laser disc. Anybody ever have a laser disc? Where you had to flip it halfway through the movie. They were like this big, and you'd flip it through the movie. And then came DVDs. And then Blu-ray, and now things are pretty much all digital. Okay, excellent. Go ahead to the next one. Who is this?
I don't know.
Oh, sorry, my mic's not on. Say it again.
I do not know.
Do not know, okay?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know.
No idea.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. So if you were alive in the 80s or the 90s, you would definitely know who this person is. And who is this?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He was like the top movie star for years and years and years and years. And he's still in some movies. Is he in new Expendables? Is he in that one that's coming out? Anybody know? No? Okay, that sounded like a disappointed response. No. All right. Well, I'll start at this end. Okay, next picture. What is that? Okay, it's a... All right, good.
Joystick?
Okay, what do you think it is?
A joystick?
Oh, okay, all right, what do we have?
A lever.
A lever, okay.
It looks like a game control.
Okay, all right.
Some kind of a controller for something.
All right, a controller for something?
A joystick.
A joystick, okay, so it is in fact a joystick from the Atari, I think that's a 2600, and it is used, and that's all you had, like... We have a new camera that we're working with, and it has all these controls. You can do all this stuff. Like, I can handle one button. Like, that was video games. You just control it and push one button. And now, like, an Xbox controller has what? Well, A, B, C, D, X, Y, Z, W, J, back one, two, back. Like, there are way too many buttons, okay? I only have one thumb.
I can play a video game without even looking at it.
I know you could. And we're going to talk about why you can do that and why I can't. How many of you have ever played an Atari 2600 and used this controller? All right. It was one. Oh, you have. Okay, cool. Next picture. What is this?
I do not know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
Looks like a jump rope.
A jump rope? Okay. Good. Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
A jump rope?
A jump rope? Okay.
I don't know.
All right. So just watch what's going to happen here. What is this? Yeah, it's a Thighmaster. It's like an exercise equipment. And apparently they're still making them. They're still like a thing. And Suzanne Summers was like the person for that. And she's still alive too. So it was exercise. And I'm not going to demonstrate how it worked. So that's all right. How about the next picture here? Who are these people? Who are these guys?
I don't know.
Okay.
No idea.
All right.
The Widows.
Okay.
Not sure.
All right.
The Wiggles.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm guessing the Wiggles.
Oh, you took their answer. All right, yeah. So this is the Wiggles. This is the first group of the Wiggles. And if memory serves, when my kids were little, watch this. One of them's Jeff, one's Greg, one's Murray, and one is... Sean. Anybody remember the other one? Greg, Jeff, Murray. I don't remember. But anyway, they were like a really... Anthony, okay, yeah. Anthony was the lower left corner, right? And Jeff is down there, and that was Murray, and that was Greg. Yeah, right? Yeah, all right. So that was like a really popular kids show, and I think the Wiggles like had a final tour a couple years ago, but none of those guys were in it. They had rotated so many times. Okay, what do we have next? Okay, what is this?
All right, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
Looks like a DVD player.
A DVD player, okay, all right.
A camera.
A camera, all right.
A DVD player.
All right.
A USB.
Oh, a USB, okay.
DVD player.
A DVD player. Okay, no, this is actually... Whoa, sorry about that. This is actually what is called a diskette, a disk. This is actually called a floppy disk, even though it wasn't floppy. And this was a 3.5-inch floppy disk. How many of you have ever used a 3.5-inch floppy disk on your computer? All right, it's what you used to use before they had USBs and internal memory. Now, my next question is, how many of you used 5.25 floppy disks? Yeah, that makes you really old. And they actually were floppy. And remember, you couldn't touch that spot. Like, we would learn, don't touch that spot, you'll ruin it. Like, there was a hole that you could touch that would ruin everything. Like, yeah. So, all right, that was the floppy disk. Okay, let's see. I think we've got a couple more here. What have we got next? What are these buildings? All right.
The Twin Towers.
Okay, what do you think? What's that building?
Don't know.
All right.
Twin Towers. Skyscrapers.
Okay.
The Twin Towers.
Okay.
Twin Towers.
The Twin Towers, yeah. So these are the Twin Towers, also known as the World Trade Center, that in September 11, 2001, planes crashed into it and destroyed them. And yeah, so I'm assuming all of you, how many of you remember when that happened? All right, yeah. So it was a crazy day. It was a wild couple of days. And, of course, it changed everything after that. Like, we were watching a movie with our kids a couple weeks ago, and a plane, you know, someone landed in a plane, and the family met them at the gate. They, like, waited for them to come off of the plane, and you can't do that anymore at all. But that was a big deal. So, well, excellent. You guys didn't know what many of those things were, and these people did. And you are all younger than them. Would you agree that you guys are younger than them? Yeah, that's true. Because you know what? They're old. They're just old. Some of them. I was going there. But I used a payphone. So these things are different, and you guys recognize them, and they don't. And some of those things weren't that long ago. But things have changed so much. All right, did you get a picture? All right, we're going to get a picture. All right, I'm going to stand back here. We're going to get a picture for Instagram. Smile at the camera right there. Okay, all right. And you guys, why don't you just... put your stools over there and have a seat. I'm going to bring some more people. But actually, you know what? Leave your stools there, because I'm going to bring you guys back up in a little bit. So go ahead and have a seat. Thank you very much. Give it up for these kiddos. So out of curiosity, for those of you that were not on the stage, oh boy, how many of you... sorry, I wasn't ready here. Was there anything... for those of you that weren't on the stage, did anybody not recognize one of those things? Just out of curiosity. Okay. All right. Okay. So, you know, that's a part of life. Thanks for switching that back. I got you there. I appreciate that. So I want to talk today about this idea of how something that, I mean, frankly, like Schwarzenegger, the Two Towers, like some of those things were iconic for not just one generation, but for multiple generations. And here we have the next upcoming generation on this stage, and they didn't recognize most of those things. And so what's interesting is that when you were their age, you know knew those things. And if you were just a little bit older than them, you knew many of those things. But it only takes one generation for something to be forgotten. It only takes one generation for something to be forgotten. And you know, you could talk to your grandparents, and I'm sure they would tell you stories about famous people that lived back then, and you're like, I've never heard of that. You know, and they would tell you stories about what life was like. I don't know. I'm not old enough to tell those stories. But the issue is that it doesn't take much for things to be forgotten. It only takes one generation for it to be forgotten. And if I'll just say something kind of sad and disappointing, but you're going to be forgotten in probably two generations. Because, you know, you probably know your grandparents, and you probably possibly know your great-grandparents, and maybe you knew of your great-great-grandparents. But unless you did like a legacy.com or not Giving Tree? What's the other tree thing? Lending Tree? No, that's money. What's it called? Family tree thing. Yeah, that's what they're called. Thanks. Unless you have done something like that, you probably don't even know the name of your great-great-grandparents. And, you know, they lived. And they had a life. And had children because you are here. And so it just takes one generation for things to be forgotten, and it just takes a couple generations for you to be forgotten. And so I want to talk today about a psalm of legacy and this idea of something that we should never forget. And we, last week, looked at, in this series of Summer of Psalms, yet another Summer of Psalms, which we will be wrapping up next Sunday. Last week, we looked at the shortest psalm in the Bible, and how it's something that we could carry with us. It's a Swiss Army psalm. You can remember it everywhere. Well, ironically, and this wasn't part of my plan, but this is the second longest psalm in the Bible that we're going to be looking at today. And so the longest is Psalm 119, which we said last week, and you know we're probably going to do that a whole series maybe. But I want to talk about this idea of never forgetting, and we're going to be looking at Psalm 1. Uh-oh, did I just crash it? No. I went too fast. There we go. Oh, there we go. Sorry, not Psalm. We're going to be looking at Psalm 78. And so you can go ahead and open your Bibles. You have the YouVersion app. You can tap on Psalms. It's about a third of the way down. And we're going to be in 78. And like I said, this is the second longest psalm in the Bible. And because of that, I'm going to teach the second half of this a little bit differently. But I want to look at this psalm because this is written by a guy named Asaph. And it'll say that right at the top. It'll say a psalm of Asaph. And we know that Asaph, he was one of the Levites. And the Levites were the ones that were in charge of the Old Testament temple worship or the tabernacle worship. They were the ones that was kind of they were the worship team, the worship band of their day. And Asaph has had 12 psalms throughout the book of Psalms, the 150 of them. 12 of them are attributed to him. And so he was in charge of the temple worship during the time of David and Solomon. So we did a series called After God on the life of King David. And that's on the slide at the beginning and afterwards here. But he lived during that time. And so he wrote this psalm about that. And so the book of Psalms, as we said throughout the series, is a collection of songs that were sung for worship. And so Psalm 78 was a psalm or song that Asaph wrote. And he wanted it to be this idea of never forgetting. And so the thing is that, sorry, Arnold, but it doesn't really matter if you're forgotten. Arnold Schwarzenegger in a couple of generations, in the scheme of things. Even something as incredible as the World Trade Center, as awful as horrendous, like it eventually won't matter as much. It affects our lives, but there's something that will matter, and that is our eternity. And this psalm talks about how we are only one generation away from forgetting what God has done for us, what God has done for you. And so this idea is, again, I don't think you need to sit down with your kids and say, hey, guys, we need to have a serious talk about payphones. Like, probably not. It's probably not something that you will do. When you get old like me, you sit around and say, oh, I remember back in the day. And when you start with a phrase like that, then you are old. But it's not something you really need to sit around and seriously talk about. But when it comes to your relationship with God, your relationship with Jesus, it does matter. This is the most important thing that you can ever communicate to your kids, to the next generation. And if we don't, and that's kind of what the psalm writer, what Asaph was doing here, was saying, look, it's really important. We can't forget what God has done because we're just one generation away from forgetting that. We're one generation away from kind of being like, oh yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. And Asaph says, no. This is a psalm of legacy. This is something that's going to last for generation and generation and generation. And so it's something that we should never forget. So the first thing that he says there in verses 1 to 3 of Psalm 78, as he says, remember them. Remember them. He tells the audience, the people that are singing or listening to this psalm, he says, remember, don't forget. Remember them, and not just remember them, but actually apply them. I'm going to move this one because I'm totally going to knock it over. But understand them and live them out. He says in verses 1 to 3, he says, oh, my people, listen to my instructions. And this word listen, it is the Hebrew word, actually doesn't mean just like, oh, yeah, I heard that thing. It means to actually kind of consider it, ponder it, obey it. So he says, listen to my instructions, obey, understand these instructions, understand what it is that God has told us to do. He says, open your ears to what I'm saying, which is it's a weird metaphor in Hebrew that's kind of like stretch your ears out, make them bigger, like a classic like cartoon or something. When you like make your ear bigger so you can hear it. And it says, so you can hear it to what I'm saying, for I'm going to speak to you in a parable. I'm going to teach you hidden lessons from our past. Stories we have heard and known. He's like, listen to these things, obey them, get them into you, remember these stories. And then he explains how. He says, they're stories that our ancestors handed down to us. He says, you know what you know because the generation before you told you about God, told you about what he has done. And of course, this was written to Old Testament Israel, so they weren't talking about Jesus yet. They were looking forward to what was called the Messiah, the Messiah. Also, that's the Hebrew word. The Greek word is Christ, the Christos. So they were looking forward to Jesus, but he hadn't come yet. And so the psalm writer is saying, Asaph is saying, don't forget these things. And don't just remember them, but live them out. Understand it. You know, on some level, not just say, yeah, I've seen an Atari 2600 game controller joystick, but to be able to say, oh, I've used one. I know how it works. Like, live it out. So he says, remember these things. Listen. Open your ears. Ponder them. Obey them. And we actually talked about this in our last series, Familying, when we looked at Deuteronomy chapter 6. And it's the kind of the foundation for our value of family here as a church. This isn't on the screen. And the idea that we are to hear God's commands and let them work in us before we impress them on our children. And so we are told to remember because we are one generation from forgotten. And the Asaph is saying here, don't just say these things and not live them because no one wants to listen to a person like that. We have a fancy Greek word for that we use every day to talk about a person that says one thing and lives differently. It begins with an H. What is it? Hypocrite. A hypocrite. And that word literally meant in the Greek to wear a mask. No one wants to listen to a hypocrite. So this command from Asaph to the people of Israel, and frankly that applies to us today too, is don't be a hypocrite. You have something that matters. You have something that's more valuable than anything else that we want to pass on to the next generation. And if you're a hypocrite, it's not going to sink in. It's not going to matter. So first of all, we need to live it out. We need to remember it and live it. And he says that we know this because our ancestors handed it down to us. And you are frankly all here because someone handed the message of Jesus to you, invited you to church. And maybe they were a generation above you, but somewhere before you existed, somebody knew that message and passed it down. You know, and we are here 2,000 years later, 2,000 some years later, because the 12 apostles, the 12 disciples of Jesus, took that message and shared it. And then the message grew and grew and grew. And we are here because of the generation before us. But if we stop, no one's going to know this message the next time. The next generation will not know it. And so before we get into passing this message on, before we get into this legacy idea, Asaph says, we need to live it. Don't be hypocrites. Live it out. Be real. And of course, you can't pass along something that you don't know. You've got to If you've had an experience with a payphone, it's a lot easier to explain how it works. And so he says, remember, remember them. The second thing Asaph says is to pass them. He says, remember them so that you can pass them. Because he wants you to pass them on, pass along this instruction, pass along these stories, these God moments, the Word of God, the stories that we know from the Bible, the things that God has done in your life, how Jesus changed you, all these things together. He says you need to live it and understand it, remember them, so that you can pass them on. And that's what he says in verses 4 to 6. He says, we will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation. So we're not hiding them. We're not keeping it in. Don't be like, oh, I have a personal private faith. I'm not going to push that on my children. What kind of faith is that? You need to be telling them. Because if it hasn't changed your life, you're right. You shouldn't pass it on them. Maybe you need to go back to the previous step. But he says, tell them. We do not hide these from our children. We tell the next generation. And that might be your physical children. It might be a relative. It might be a friend. It might be someone that you are to tell them, hey, let me tell you about what God has done in my life. Let me tell you about this Bible passage that has changed me. Let me tell you about my church and what God has been doing in me and through me as we serve here. He says, we will tell them. We will tell the next generation. What are we telling them? About the glorious deeds of the Lord. Don't just be like, yeah, I got a cool story about this one time or this thing happened. No, no, no. We're talking about Jesus. We're talking about what God has done, and that's what's going to matter. That's why Schwarzenegger won't matter. But the message of Jesus, the gospel message, the truth of what God has done. Tell about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. And now he's specifically, again, he's talking to the Israelites about their story. He said, for he issued his laws to Jacob. He gave his instructions to Israel. He commanded our ancestors, what did he command? To teach them, teach these commands to their children. Teach them to their children. And then after that, so that that generation might know them. Even the children not born. And then they, in turn, will teach their own children. So this Psalm of Legacy, Asaph is saying, look, tell your kids about what God has done. Live it out. Tell them about it. So that when they have a chance, they can tell the next generation. And the next generation. So that they will have hope rather than something that is just forgotten because we're not willing to share. Because we hide these truths from our children. So we are told to be an example. And here's the deal. If you're watching online, if you're listening, if you're in the room, there's a natural tendency for you to assume that it's my job to do that. Because that's what I'm paid for, right? It's my job. I'm the pastor. You might assume it's Chris's job because he's one of the pastors. Maybe it's Zach's job because he's the MC3 student coordinator. There's this assumption that it's somebody else's job, but Asaph is saying here, no, 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 no. It is your responsibility. It is your responsibility. It is on your shoulders to pass this along to the next generation. And again, maybe that's your kids. Maybe that's the students or the kids that you work with, you serve here at MC3. Maybe that's a neighbor. Maybe it's a coworker or a friend. But it's up to you. It's our responsibility. So I want you to just do this real quick. Turn to your neighbor and say, it's up to you. Out loud. Yeah, this is not somebody else's job. This isn't their job. Oh, it's up to my parents. They'll figure that out. No, it is your job, no matter how old or young you are. We are to pass these truths on, to tell others, to tell the next generation what God has done. So you remember them so that you can pass them so that, and here's why it matters, so that they will trust him. There we go. Remember them so that you can pass them so that they will trust him. That's the goal. The goal isn't to have a cool story to tell. The goal isn't, hey, look at this neat thing in my life. Let me tell you about what God has done so that you put your faith in him. So that you trust him. And so in the rest of the passage, or at least the couple of verses there, which says 8 to 8. That should be 7 to 8. So that each generation should set its hope anew on God. We're telling them, we're living it, we're passing it so that they will put their hope in God. This is the NLT. The NIV says it this way. I think it's kind of a neat. It says, then they will put their trust in God and not forget his deeds. And so Asaph says, look, you need to remember these things so that you can pass them so that they will trust, so that they will set their hope anew on God, not forgetting his glorious miracles and obeying his commands. So that they're not up here saying, hey, tell me about God. And they're like, I don't know. Maybe it's headlights. Is that a DVD player? Maybe it's a toll booth. Because if they don't know, they're not going to be able to put their faith in God. Not forgetting them and obeying his commands. And then he kind of shares the opposite. He says, then they will not be like their ancestors, stubborn, rebellious, and unfaithful, refusing to give their hearts to God. He says, look, he's trying to communicate, listen, everybody, you need to remember these things so that you can pass these things along, so that they'll trust God. And then he shares the flip side, so that they won't suffer, so that they won't miss out by just not following what he has for them, so that they're not going to live lives in rebellion. And people are like, why is my life falling apart? And why does this thing happen to me? And I'm often like, when you talk to people, like, where's your relationship with Jesus? Not that he makes everything easy, not that everything suddenly becomes perfect, but there's hope. Hope that doesn't exist apart from that. We were talking yesterday. There's an article in a magazine that I have talking about building a sustainable house. And there were these different things in there, and we're like, and one of the things, and I'm not going to explain this, you can discuss this with your kids at home, but one thing said, install a bidet. And if you don't know what a bidet is, that's fine. And the discussion was, oh, because it will save paper. Like, that was like, it'll save paper and save trees. But then on the flip side, it uses more water. So you're saving the paper, but you're using the water. So which one's more important? And we came to the conclusion that the best way to create a sustainable future for yourself is to no longer be alive. Because if you're not alive, then you are not creating an unsustainable future. And that's kind of this idea. Like, if there's no hope, that actually makes sense. But we have hope in Jesus. And the idea is we need to live it and then tell the next generation so that they have that hope. And they will then trust him. And then they will tell the next generation. They will talk about the amazing things that God has done. And we have Prime groups starting up. The sign-ups are out there. They're starting next month. A chance for you to discuss the point in more depth and talk and build relationships with other people at MC3. And at the beginning of every Prime group, we share what are called God moments. And this is not to fill time. It's not because, well, I guess we're supposed to do that. It's so that we can tell the stories of what God has done in our lives and share them with others. And so this is what Asaph is telling us, that we need to communicate this. Because this message is one generation away from being forgotten. And are you telling that? So are you remembering them so that you can pass them, so that they will trust him? Are you living as an example to the next generation? So for parents, maybe, what does your time with God communicate to your kids? Well, I don't really have a time with God. Then you're communicating something to your kids. What does your church attendance communicate to your kids? Well, we go when we can. Okay, then they probably will too. Oh, no, but they're not going to see it that way. Yes, they will. And they do. What about serving in ministry? Are you serving? Or are you just sitting? Because your kids will learn, okay, that's the way this thing works. But that's clearly not what Jesus has told us to do. And don't think that, well, they don't really see that. No, you are always communicating something to your kids. Kara encouraged us earlier. Doesn't matter to me. I graduated 20 years ago. But encouraged many of you with, hey, exciting, school's starting this week. Yay! And maybe that's cool for you. I did not. I wasn't a fan of that. But some of you are going into school, and starting school in the next week, and you were just kind of new to school maybe last year, to your school or to your grade, and now you're going to be an upperclassman. Now you're the one that people look up to. And are you setting an example to the generation following you? If people, if the seventh graders coming into your school saw the way you lived and exactly mimicked that, if they did exactly the way you live when it comes to living for Jesus, would you be proud of that? If not, you need to check yourself, because we're just one generation away. What about, we've got people that serve on ministry teams. And sometimes, unfortunately, it feels like you're just punching a clock. We talked about that at our big old meeting last year. Like, I'm just here to do my time. Like, you've got some kind of community service thing that you need to appeal for. Like, no, you're changing the lives of people. And those people might be students. They might be children. But you're involved in passing this message on to the next generation. It might be on this stage and communicating through worship. Are we an example worth following? Because we're just one generation away from this message being forgotten. And so it's up to me and you to pass this on. And that's what Asaph is saying. Asaph says, listen, we can't forget this. This is too important. And we're not just saying it because it'll be cool to have a good story. We're not saying it here so that, oh, we can cover our offering every week, cover our budget every week. No, because there's depth to this message. And the depth of this message is what God can do in your life. And what Jesus can do for you. So this is a psalm of legacy. We are to never forget. All right, can I have you kids come back up here and give me a hand with something else? I need your help. I'm feeling alone up here. I need another guy. Come on. Who's missing? Paisley? Oh, she's in the bathroom. Okay. All right. Now, what you guys are going to have, you've ever played the telephone game? You ever played the telephone game? Anybody ever play that game? No? You can just hang out there for a while, Isaac. And sometimes it was called Whisper Down the Lane. So what I'm going to do, okay, are you with me? I'm going to whisper a sentence to you, okay? And then you are going to whisper it to her. And she is going to whisper it to you. And you're going to whisper it to her. And she's going to whisper it to you. And you're going to whisper it to her. And then you're going to tell me what you heard, okay? You can only say it once. So no, like, repeating it. No saying that again. You with me? So you can only say the sentence one time. And you have to kind of do your best to figure out what you heard. Does that make sense? So when we get down to the end here. Okay, all right, let me get a piece of paper here, or get my notebook here so I don't say it wrong. And I'm going to turn off my mic for this. Okay, what did you hear?
Holy be slowly?
Holy be slowly. Oh, am I on? There we go. I said, surely you can't be serious. I am serious, and stop calling me Shirley. And you heard, holy be slowly?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, so some things were lost. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. All right. We're going to do it again. We'll do it the other way this time. Actually, don't knock that over. We'll go this way. All right. Well, we clearly have a breakdown in communication here, which actually is the point. The point is that even with seven people, and if we do this with adults, guys, listen, if we do this with adults, you would have the same problems. Because it is hard. Have adults played this game before? Does it go just fine? No. As my one friend used to always say, it always ended up with purple monkey dishwasher. That's how it always ended. Purple monkey dishwasher. Because the idea is that a message has to be clearly communicated. And this message that we're talking about, by the way, I said, let the storm rage on. The cold never bothered me anyway. That's what it started with. I had your shot, right? So, but it has to be communicated. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a message that's going to change lives. And so we don't want to forget it. We want to communicate it. And we need to do it clearly and tell the next generation and the next generation so that they don't get to the end of our like purple monkey dishwasher or bobbly boobly. What do we get to the end of that one? So, all right. Whoop. You all right? All right. Well, we're done with you guys. So there are no more injuries, heads, feet, letters. Give them another hand and you guys can have a seat. Thank you. You can get back to your seat. Yeah, so I probably should have prepped you guys and said, like, that is the way it goes with adults. You were not being tested on that. School doesn't start till next week. So here's what happens. Asaph then talks about the importance of remembering this message and remembering these things. And then he does kind of a cool little thing for a whole lot of verses here for the rest of the psalm. And he shares some stories of Israel's history. Remember, he was a Levite. He worked during the time of David and Solomon. And we have the whole story of the Bible. We actually did two series, and again, they'll be on that slide, but we did a series called Word, where we walked through the entire story from the Old Testament through the New Testament, from Genesis to Revelation. And then we rebooted it, and we did a series called The Story, where we did the same thing. And you can find them at mc3church.org. Again, those slides will be there. And so, but Asaph, he was telling people that didn't just... This wasn't like 2,000 years later or 4,000 years later like we are. These were people that knew of grandparents that lived this out. They had great grandparents. And so he's kind of picks and chooses and says, listen, it's so important to pass the message of what God has done on. It's so important to share that. He says, let me just give you some examples of things that you should remember. And I'm going to do something that I have never done at MC3. I've got my paper Bible here. And I found that getting all these verses on the screen would be a whole lot of reading. So I'm just going to summarize some of these stories that Asaph shares from Israel's history. And again, these aren't in order because the people that he was sharing them with kind of knew the stories. But he says, listen, you know these stories. Don't forget. Pass them on. And so here's some of the things that Asaph shares. The first thing he says, remember this, is that it's not your strength. And in verse 9 of Psalm 78, he talks about the men of Ephraim and the tribe. They were one of the tribes of Israel. And it says that they were armed with bows. And that was showing that they were powerful. They were strong. He says they were armed with bows, but despite the strength that they thought they had, they didn't follow God. And so he says, look, it's not about your strength. And for us today, we are not from the tribe, one of the tribes of Israel. And we are probably not armed with bows except for hunting season. But he says, it's not your strength. Don't think that it's anything that you have done that really makes a difference. I know that's really depressing. But it's not about how much you've achieved. It's not about how smart you think you are. It's not about how far along in life you are or how nice your house is or your car or your payphone or cell phone, whichever you might carry in your pocket. He says, it's not about your strength. He says, these people are armed with bows. And then he says, as a flip side, he says, it's God's strength. Sorry, that should be a phrase. It's not your strength, it's God's strength. And it says in verses 10 to 11, talks about how, you know, despite the fact that they were the arrow, what do you call it? Archers. There we go. They were the guys that had the arrows. They had the power. And they still walked away from God because it wasn't about the arrows and the bows and the strength that they had that way. It was about what God would do in them. And so he says, don't forget. You know that story about Ephraim. We don't. We actually don't know where this story actually was found. It's possible that it was from Judges. But scholars aren't really sure exactly what the story was. But clearly the audience were like, oh, yeah, I remember that story. You're right. I shouldn't forget that because they thought their strength came from their bows. But really, it was about God's strength. And so then he goes on and shares another story. He says, remember, God has provided. And in verses 12 to 16, he talks about the Exodus. And he talks about three different parts of the Exodus. It's from Exodus 14 and Exodus 13 and Exodus 17. But he talks about three different things that happened in the story of the Israelites being freed from Egypt. And one of the things, and of course you probably are familiar with this story, was that God provided a way through the Red Sea. They got to the Red Sea. Pharaoh's armies were coming up behind them. They're like, oh no, we're done. We're dead. This is the end. And God miraculously parted the Red Sea. The people walked through on dry land. And so they thought it was the end, and God provided. God made a way when there wasn't a way there before. And then to go on, they're like, okay, now we're here in the desert. Now what? And God provided a pillar of cloud. I don't know what that looked like, but it was clearly something obvious that they followed by day. And then there was a pillar of cloud at night, a pillar of fire at night, so they could follow him at night. So God clearly led. He provided the way that they should go. And then it goes on and he says that God provided. They were at a spot where like, oh no, we're in a desert. And the desert means there's no water. And what are we going to do? And God told Moses, go ahead and strike this rock and water would flow out of it. And water did flow out of it. And God provided water when they didn't have any water. And so Asa says, listen, don't forget. God has provided. Don't forget that. And in our lives today, God has provided. There are so many things that he has provided. And then he reminds them, God has provided and will provide. And he shares the story in verses 30 to 31. I'm sorry. In verses 17 to 22, it talked about how they had just gotten water. God had parted the Red Sea. They had seen the plagues, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And they were out there in the desert. God miraculously was leading them, pillar of fire, pillar of cloud, and provided water. And then they're like, oh, yeah, well, God's never going to provide food for us. And they started complaining after seeing all of that. And we're talking over the span of a few months. And Asaph's like, don't forget that God has provided and he's going to provide. And so then he actually caused a plague to go among the people, a fire to destroy the people that were complaining and said no. And then he provided manna, miraculous manna from heaven. And so Asaph was like, listen, don't forget these stories. Because we're going to get into times where we're like, oh, God can't provide. No, he's like, no, God has provided and he will provide for you. Don't forget this. Pass this on to the next generation. Tell them what God has done. And then he goes on and says in verses 23 to 29 that God gives you what you need. God will provide in ways that don't make sense and he gives you everything that you need. There is nothing that you need that you don't have. And and again, if you want to come to me afterwards, those are all the passages I have broken down here. But he says in, this is from Exodus 16, he talks about how God provided this manna. And manna was incredible. Manna was this thing where every morning the dew would settle on the ground and they would wake up and it would turn into this like bread kind of honey cake thing. Basically, the word means like Krispy Kreme donuts. Like it was sweet. And so every morning they ate this manna that was Krispy Kreme donuts, and it was good for them. And then except for one day of the week where God told them to take to rest, and that's a different story. But 6 days a week, God provided manna miraculously. They didn't have to do anything. They just had to go out and pick up the donuts. And it provided everything they needed for sustenance. And then they were like, but can we have some meat? And God says, okay, fine, and provides this miraculous, like a huge flock, that's what you call birds, a huge flock of quail like lands right there, and they essentially are like, come and catch me. And so they were able to catch this quail and eat them, and they were like, this is delicious. And then it says, so God gave them exactly what they needed. You've got Krispy Kremes that will satisfy you and some meat to eat just for you meat lovers out there. But God gives you what you need, but not what you want. And just because we don't have something that we want doesn't mean God isn't providing. Because, no, he's going to give you what you need. And that's the next thing there. In Psalm 78, in verses 30 to 31, this is such an interesting passage. And I wasn't familiar with this as much. But it said that in Numbers 11, 33 to 34, it says, while they were eating quail, the passage in Numbers says, while it was still in their mouth, they started complaining. They're like, well, we don't like this as much. Can we have something better? And it said that God provided a plague, a killer disease, that struck down those people that were complaining. So they're eating the meat. They're like, we don't have any meat. God's like, fine, have meat. And they're like, but this isn't as good as I like it. It's a little too salty. Can I have something better? And God's like, fine. Boom. Disease, you're dead. And the issue is that when it comes to Asaph saying to the Israelite people, don't forget, God's always going to give you what you need, but not necessarily what you want. And that doesn't mean that what you want is bad. It certainly doesn't mean that God isn't coming through. But what it does mean is that what you have is what God wants you to have. And you need to be content with that. And say, okay, God, thank you. Thank you for giving me what I need. And again, you look fairly healthy. You're all wearing clothing. Like, you've got what you need, not necessarily what you want. And Asa says, don't forget this. And we need to tell these stories to our kids so that they don't forget and so they don't start complaining when they don't have what they want. But God, I want this. I need more. I need a better of this. I need a nicer that. And then they become, they don't put their trust in God because they don't have the right attitude. He goes on and says that God is merciful. In verses 32 to 39, he talks about, you know, he kind of goes back and forth about these different times where they would turn away from God and God would forgive them. And they would disobey and God would be like, I'm angry with your disobedience, but I still forgive you, but I still care about you, but I still love you. And there's this repeated pattern of God's mercy that we see in verses 32 to 39. And that comes from a whole bunch of stories in Israel's history. But then he also says God is merciful and powerful. He says don't mistake God's mercy for weakness. Don't assume that because God cares about you and loves you and is kind to you even when you're a jerk, don't assume that God is weak. He is extraordinarily powerful. And he can and will come through in any situation that is necessary. In verses 40 to 45, he talks about the plagues in Egypt. Sorry, the 10 plagues. And of course, you can read about that in Exodus chapters 7 through 12. And so they, you know, rescued from Egypt from slavery with these amazing, powerful plagues. And then after a time of in the desert, and again, the story and word tells you a little bit what happens there. But then they eventually go in to the land that God promised them, to the promised land. And the first city was Jericho. And God said, this is going to be your first city to take over. And the people didn't have to fight a battle. They had to walk around a wall. And God brought the walls down. And so this whole thing was that God is merciful, but he is so powerful too. He is going to provide everything, just like he has provided powerful, amazing ways for the Israelites, not just leaving their time of slavery, but entering the promised land. And God led them into that battle. And God has the power to do anything. And then the next thing that you see here in verses 56 to 64, it talks about how God confronts sin. Like, God is merciful, but he doesn't like, sin's not a big deal. Every time we sin, we turn our back and turn away from what God wants for us. And God's not fine with that because what he wants for you is better than anything that we want for ourselves. And so he deals with sin head on. It's called syncretism. In the beginning of 1 Samuel and through the time of the judges, you see that these people, they allowed the other nations to kind of water down their faith in God. They're like, yeah, you know what? I'll do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know what? I'll talk about loving Jesus, but maybe we'll throw some karma in there. You know, you get what you give. That sounds good. We'll kind of mix that in and maybe we'll tie in some singing, but it doesn't really matter what I sing about or who I sing to. And they became diluted. And God was like, no, this is it. I'm tired of this. And so there was a tragic moment where the ark, which is how they worship God back during the tabernacle time. We have a series called Dwell that talks about that. That's also on the slide. And eventually God's like, that's it. I'm done. And he has the ark, like the center of worship, the most important part of their worship in the temple and the tabernacle. He has the ark stolen and taken to the Philistines. And he's like, how does it look now? You still want to blend everything together? You still want to disobey me? He says that God confronts sin. Don't forget that. And then he says, but God confronts sin and he is full of grace. And the last part of Psalm 78, verses 65 through 72, talk about how God said, you know what? I was so fed up, tired of your disobedience, but I'm not done caring for you. And Asaph reminds the people that despite the disobedience and despite how awful we have been, God said, I'm going to give you a king. And this king that's going to come from all the descendants, he is going to be a man after my own heart. And it said that King David led with a kind heart and a good spirit. And so he was a great leader. And God said, I could have been done with you, but no, I'm going to give you this wonderful king that's going to make life better for you. And then he refers to the fact, and this is Asaph. So Asaph lived through the life of David and Solomon. That was it. But ultimately, God would send a perfect king through the line of David, a descendant of David named Jesus. And to demonstrate that grace, Jesus died on the cross for our sins so that we can have hope. And so Asaph went through this list of just random stories, if you will, of the history of Israel to say, don't forget. We're just one generation away from forgetting what God has done. And so it's our job to tell these stories, to pass them on to the next generation. Whatever that looks like. Again, it might be family, it might be friends, it might be coworkers, but it's our job. And so Psalm 78 is the Psalm of Legacy because we are to never forget. We are to communicate that message so that as it goes from generation to generation, they can tell the story of what God has done. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for this story that, the psalm that Asaph uses to recount the stories of what you did for Israel. Thank you for your graciousness, your mercy, your power, all those things we see in those stories. And God, thank you that we, if we take the time, we can see those stories in our own lives as well. We can see how you have cared for us and provided for us. And if nothing else, we know that you have sent Jesus to take our sin. And so we are grateful for that. And God, I pray that as Asaph instructed the Israelites at the beginning of this psalm, that you would help us to remember these things, live them out, be an example, not be a hypocrite, so that we can share them with the next generation, whether that's our kids, our friends, our coworkers, so that they will put their faith in you, so that they will put their faith in what Jesus did on the cross. Help us to not make that someone else's job, but make that our own responsibility. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.